an easy question. What's this? A songbook. What's in it? Okay. What are they for? Sing praises. Teach. Admonish. Something over here? Edification. Absolutely. All of those apply. That's what we have them for. The book of Psalms is titled Sefer Tehillim, or the Book of Praises. I think the Septuagint titles it Psalmoi in the Hebrew, meaning poems sung to accompaniment of musical instruments. There are 150 of them that are in there. We didn't get to all of those, but we covered several of them this past quarter. The topics in the Psalms include joy, war, peace, worship, judgment, messianic prophecies, praise, and lamentations, and several other topics. Some are in the form of prayers. 9 of them are acrostic psalms. Does anybody know what an acrostic is? Yeah. Yeah, the one of the letters, the first letter in the or the let one of the letters in the first word or the last word, they spell something out. The most popular one probably is 119, and it goes through the entire Jewish alphabet, all 22 letters. They're also divided, and what we're going to look at tonight are songs that are considered song of ascents or degrees, and we'll look at that in just a minute. Within the hymns for worship hymnal that we sing out of, there are 702 songs in there, and those topics include joy, similar to the Psalms, assurance, Christ, similar to the messianic promises, prophecies, praise, judgment, faithfulness, and peace. So a lot of the same topics are in our songbook that are in the book of Psalms. Turn over to Colossians chapter 3. Verse 16 says, "Let the word of Christ dwell in you richly in all wisdom, teaching and admonishing one another in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing with grace in your hearts to the Lord." So just as it was mentioned, psalms and songs are meant to teach us, to admonish us, or what's another word for admonish? To warn, right? Warn us. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 19 and 20, speaking to yourselves in psalms and hymns and spiritual songs, singing to the Lord, so sing praises, edifying one another, 1 Corinthians chapter 14 and verse 26. Let's take a look at that. If anyone's... How is it then, brethren, whenever you come together, each of you has a psalm, has a teaching, has a tongue, has a revelation, has an interpretation. Let all things be done for edification. So we see Paul says that singing is also for edification, as Brother Bruce mentioned earlier. So I think it's important, as we have studied the Psalms throughout this last quarter and wrap that up tonight, to understand the purpose of those and the meaning of those. And I'm sure it was discussed earlier this quarter in some other classes, but just as a way of reminder to us. So now let's turn to Psalm 122. We have three that we're going to look at, and of course I signed up for this. I don't know why they put three together, and I don't know why I signed up for three, because I can't seem to get through 4 or 5 verses in an entire class, and now I'm expected to get through 3 psalms. So we'll see how that goes, but we're gonna try to do our best with it. But let's read that. Jacob, would you read Psalm 122 for us, please?
Built as a of Jerusalem, may they be secure who love you. Peace be within your walls and security within your towers. For my brothers and companions' sake, I will say, peace be within you. For the sake of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek your good.
Okay, so at the very top of the psalm, it says, Song of Ascents of David. Does anybody have something different in their version? Degrees, Song of Degrees. Does anybody know what that means? There, before you get to that, think about that. There are 15 of these, Psalm 120 through Psalm 134. They're all collected together there. And there are 15 of them. Four of them were written by David. One of them was written of Solomon, either for Solomon or by Solomon. There's some debate on which. And then 10 of them are unknown or anonymous. But what is meant by, and why would they put in there, Song of Ascents or Degrees? Okay. Okay. All right. So the Jerusalem was on a hill, and the temple was on a hill in Jerusalem. So one possibility is that as they ascended up to worship, they sang these songs, one of these 15 songs. Anybody else find something to add to that? Theory or possibility that's added to that is that supposedly there were 15 steps based on some scriptures in Ezekiel, and so there were 15 songs of ascent. But there's no credibility to that. But if that were the case, then each song would be sung on one step as they progressed on. But there were some other thoughts behind these songs of ascent. They were song sung supposedly during pilgrimages to Jerusalem, but would have the same idea as Jacob mentioned, going up to Jerusalem. Is one theory that they had. There's another theory that had to do with the rhythm of the song and Song of Degrees. So as it progressed, it went through different degrees. One theory was that it was a song of scales. So as you sang these songs, they were to be sung on different scales, each progressing upward. Another one that is out there is that it's called gradation and elevation of thought. And so the composition, and there's a couple of the psalms that would follow that line of thinking, that this gradation of elevation of thought, turn to Psalm 121. Should be in the same opening that you're in. And just each thought, each verse, or each thought builds upon the preceding verse or preceding thought. So if you look at that, I will lift up, Psalm 121, I will lift up my eyes to the hills from whence comes my help. My help comes from the Lord. And so you see as it progresses. And one of the psalms we'll look at tonight kind of carries with it that thought. So there are several different philosophies behind what it is. I don't know that any of them, one of them, are any better than the other. So I can't tell you exactly what it means, but I like the idea that there were songs to be sung as they were going to worship or going to Jerusalem on their journey. And we'll look at that tonight, and especially in Psalm 122. It lends itself to that thinking. If you look at Psalm 122, we go through this, and it says, I was glad when they said to me, let us go to the house of the Lord. So they're going up to the house of the Lord. Starting out, our feet have been standing within your gates, O Jerusalem. So you start out at the gate of Jerusalem, and you walk up to the temple, right? Jerusalem is a city that's compact together. So you get the idea that as they progress up, they can see Jerusalem out on the steps or up on the hill as they're progressing upwards. It talks about the thrones that are there and then praying for peace. So these songs of ascent, songs of degrees, all of them appear to have hope or praise as their central theme. So when we look at Psalm 122, how would you summarize Psalm 122?
Praying and giving thanks to the Lord.
Okay, praying and giving thanks to the Lord. Excellent. Anybody else? Obviously, it's about worship, isn't it? Going to the house of the Lord. It's about hope, peace. Pray for peace. Pray for prosperity. In verse 1, it says, I was glad when they said, let us go to the house of the Lord. They're in Jerusalem and David is there. David is king. He wrote this song. Where was the house of the Lord? This is a trick question. Be careful. Where was the house of the Lord? Huh? Okay. Where was it? Where was the tabernacle? Well, it was moved from Shiloh to Gibeon. Okay? And before the ark was moved to Jerusalem, where was it? Kiriath-Jearim? Okay, so it wasn't even in the tabernacle, and there's speculation behind that, but we don't have enough time to get into it tonight. But the point is the tabernacle, the place where they offered sacrifices, was not in Jerusalem. But you remember in 1 Kings, turn over there. Actually, 1 Chronicles, let's look at 1 Chronicles just quickly. Chapter 16. In verse 1, so they brought the ark of God. This is after Uzzah had been killed. They had tried to transport the ark to Jerusalem originally. They did it incorrectly on the cart. Uzzah was killed. Now they're trying again, and this time they carried it correctly. They brought the ark of God and set it in the midst of the tabernacle that David had erected for it. And they offered burnt offerings and peace offerings before God. So the tabernacle, the ark was in Jerusalem in a tabernacle. Not the tabernacle that was built by Moses and Aaron, but a tabernacle that David had set up in Jerusalem. So it was this tabernacle where the ark was that David was going to. Why? Where was God? What's the mercy seat? Yes. Where what? The presence of God. Okay. So when David said, I was glad when they said, let us go to the house of the Lord, he was talking about going to where the ark was, the tabernacle or tent that the Ark of the Covenant was in. Okay. So if we look at this psalm, and he starts out from the very beginning, I was glad when they said to me, let us go to the house of the Lord to worship. That's why he was going. What message can we learn from that? What should be our attitude toward worship? Reverence. Okay. Want to be there.
Glad to see the day approaching.
Glad to see the day approaching. Anticipating, even. Okay, anybody else? Encouragement. It's to go to be encouraged, that's right. Anybody else? Any other comments? Kevin? Okay, all right. And that, it's interesting that you say that, because if you look at this psalm, there seems to be structure to it. And it's the progression that we were talking about. You see there in verse 4, we talked about, and I didn't mention this, I had meant to mention this, but in verse 4, where is he talking about where the tribes go up, the tribes of the Lord, to where? To the testimony of Israel. And what was the testimony of Israel? The Ark of the Testimony, or the Ark of the Covenant, right? So this is where he was going, and I meant to point that out earlier. Okay. Yeah. Yes. And it shouldn't be something that we dread, something that's a burden on us, something that we feel compelled to do. We should be glad, like David was, to go to worship.
Jacob? It's kind of connected to that. I mean, here in verse 1 and 2, at least when I read from the ESV this evening, it has exclamation points there.
Okay.
A sense of excitement, even though
yeah.
this is something that they did, not just once in their lifetime, and many people said over and over again. And David, being the king, would have been, leading, not as a priest, but leading God's people in that. Assemblies had he been in, to offer worship to God, and yet this doesn't seem to be, for us, it's Sunday again, we drag ourselves out of bed in the morning,
yeah.
This, we have to go fulfill this obligation, not that kind of attitude, it seems like excitement, but it's a privilege.
Absolutely.
It should be for us.
Right, I think so. Okay. Yeah, absolutely. I think so, Brother Barry. If you look at verse 7, he says, peace within your walls. Actually, back up to verse 6. Pray for peace. May they prosper who love you. Peace be within your walls. Prosperity within your palaces. So absolutely, I think so. I think that's what we pray for. I think it's an example of what we can pray for, peace and prosperity. In verse 9, because of the house of the Lord our God, I will seek your good. So what significance does that place on collective worship? Because of the house of the Lord. Yep. And that's exactly right. That's the answer I was looking for. Collective worship. It's important that we do it together. And as Jacob said, the importance is placed on the place, the physical location, but on the fact that it's a collective activity and that you do it together. We all know Hebrews 10:25, not forsaking the assembling of yourselves together. Of yourselves together is the important part of that. That we're pointing out. Anybody else for Psalm 122? Okay, let's go to Psalm 127. And Eddie, can you read Psalm 127 for us? Okay, so this psalm, it says, a song of ascents of Solomon. And there are some that believe this was written by Solomon. Some believe that this was written by David for Solomon. But either way, it still has an important message. What's the central message or central theme of this psalm? Okay. All right. Anybody else? Yeah.
And if we don't build our life on the Lord, it's not going to matter.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Anybody else? Adam?
I think of the building next door. And I think of their add-on that they're doing right now. And I see this, like Jacob said, we can apply this to either our own home or the way we build a church. But it's not done with this principle, and it's done in vain.
Okay. All right. I think so. I think that's right. Anybody else? Any other thoughts on this? Look at verse 1. Unless the Lord builds the house. So this, I think this is showing dependence on God. As Brother Duke said, and also as Jacob said, unless God is in control, unless you put God in charge of whatever it is you're doing, whether it is the church, whether it is your family, I think both would apply. But unless God is at the center, at the forefront of that, then it's in vain. Also, unless the Lord guards the city. What does he say in verse 2? It is vain for you to rise up early or to sit up late to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he gives his beloved sleep. What does that term mean, he gives his beloved sleep, there in verse 2? Yeah. Absolutely. Exactly. That's right. Success depends upon God. That's what the psalmist is saying here, just like Brother Barry said. It's vain for you to rise up early, to stay up late worrying about problems, worrying about anxiety, to eat the bread of sorrows, as he says there. It's vain to worry about the troubles of life. What does bread do? Nourishes us, okay? It feeds us, sustains us. So if you think about it from that standpoint, if it is vain to eat the bread of sorrows, it is vain to eat the bread of anxiety. It's worthless to let that feed us or let that motivate us, let that sustain us. Right, right. Kevin?
Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of his peers and a lot of the people around him laughed at him because he was being a coach, doing something. But he already, you know, he was done, so to speak. He did the chasing and did the career hunting and all that. And I think of that when I read this, because how often do we today sit and do that rather than just, you know, let God provide us with what we need? And you know, that's easy to say sometimes because we always want things.
Yeah.
So, and eventually that'll change. But that's what I think of when I read it, is our culture and how challenging it's going to be as my family grows.
Yeah, you're in for a rude awakening, my friend. And boxes, they wear out pretty fast.
I'll get bigger boxes.
Anybody else? Good point. Jacob? Yeah.
And kind of timing with David's class, and he's going to start this quarter on 40. I mean, you certainly see that with religious groups, churches today, that have, instead of sticking with the scriptures and what God has authorized for us to do as a church, you know, it's like he said, even with individuals, that you know, you've always got to be busy building something, adding on. Getting involved in all these other things other than what we can read in the scriptures.
Yeah.
And that's leaving the foundation of God.
Yeah. We lose our dependence on God, and we start depending on ourselves, right? On what we can do. And that doesn't end very well when we do that. Verse 2 there, for so he gives his beloved sleep. Giving his beloved sleep or peace, tranquility, which then allows them to have peaceful sleep, I think is what the author is saying here. But then they start talking about children. I don't think, how can you have peace and children in the same psalm? I struggled with this one a little bit. No, I'm just kidding. But behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. Is he changing thoughts here about dependence upon God, or is it the same thought? It's the same thought, isn't it? And I can't remember which one said it, but somebody said it's in every aspect of our life. Dependence upon God, whether we're building a house, whether we're guarding the gates, guarding the city, whether we're raising children, we need to depend on God, but put our dependence on God. But behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is his reward. And so as we raise our children, we need to think of children as a heritage. What's a heritage? Okay. Yeah. Okay. And it's almost a reflection of you, isn't it? Based on what you're saying there. Excellent. And hopefully, it's a reflection of who? If we've raised them right. God. Right? So, this heritage, this gift, he's loaned them to us. And I want to read an excerpt from you. Edgar Guest. Anybody know who that is? I've heard the name before, but I didn't associate it with this particular poem. He's a poet, American poet, born in England. It's called The Loan. I'm not going to read the whole thing because it's very sad and I'll probably cry. But I'll read this part of it to you. I'll lend you for a little time a child of mine, God said. And then it goes on to say some other things. But then it picks up, there are lessons taught down there I want this child to learn. I've looked in the wide world over in my search for teachers true, and from the throngs that crowd life's lane, I have selected you. So, don't know much about this guy, but he understands that God loans us the children for whatever time that we have them, till they're 18, and then they go out on their own. And hopefully, we've taught them dependence upon him before they leave. What does it mean? Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed, but shall speak with their enemies in the gate. Okay. 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 All right. Good point. Back in the back. Somebody have their hand up?
Talk to them things, and they were very proud of their children.
doesn't want to talk about their kids. Someone who's either not a parent or not a parent they should be usually doesn't bring up their kids. But, you know, everyone else kind of does. It's a common cultural thing in any culture in the world. They're happy to talk about their children. It might limit what they do, but they'll still talk about it. Some cultures are more proud of, you know, whether it's a boy or a girl, depending on things, and some things aren't appropriate. But no matter what, people want to talk about their children. So what does that tell you about how God makes his love?
Okay.
So, and that's where my mind goes to, because even though you have enemies, you have people on each side of a disagreement, the one thing they can find in common is they want their children to not have to live the way they do. And that was the conversation.
Yeah, and we need to be careful about that. I've learned myself and seen it before. The concept of wanting our kids to live better than we did is okay as a concept, but we have to be careful not to give them too much, right? Because if they get too much, then they'll go the other way. They'll be selfish and not thankful for what they have. So, but yeah, I've seen that with families, and I've seen that especially if you think about those who grew up in the Depression. They always wanted to provide for their families, and then as each generation continues on, they want better for their family. And there's nothing wrong with that, but it has to be centered on God and focused on God. Brother Barry?
Jesus expounded on that in the gospel when the disciples were kind of bothered because the children were gathering close to him, and they said, no, don't do that. I'm paraphrasing. And he put his arms around one, and he proceeded to say that anybody harms him or keeps him away from, better to do this, et cetera, et cetera. But God always, from the Old Testament too, has always talked about the widows, the fatherless, always, those two. And Jesus kept up with that message.
Yeah.
And David, or Solomon, said the right thing about it.
Okay. They shall speak with their enemies in the gate. I think the meaning is that they would do honor to their family. If they're shown dependence upon God, they would gratify the heart of the parents by their successes, by their valor in defending their family name, I think as Brother Duke mentioned before. I think that just because we're running out of time, Psalm 127, I think it's designed to teach the lesson of dependence upon God in everything and in all of our walks of life. And I think that's the central message we can get. So let's go quickly to now to Psalm 130 and look at that one. Just quickly, I'll go ahead and read it. Out of the depths I have cried to you, O Lord. Lord, hear my voice. Let your ears be attentive to the voice of my supplications. If you, O Lord, should mark my iniquities, O Lord, who could stand? But there is forgiveness with you, that you may be feared. I wait for the Lord. My soul waits, and in His word I do hope. My soul waits for the Lord more than those who watch for the morning. I say more than those who watch for the morning. O Israel, hope in the Lord. For with the Lord there is mercy, and with Him is abundant redemption. And He shall redeem Israel from all his iniquities. This is one of those songs that I was talking about that builds upon the last thought. And you can see that as he goes through. I will wait for the Lord. My soul waits. My soul waits for the Lord more than those who watch for the morning. And so you can see the building, and each thought builds upon itself. But what is the central theme or the central idea of Psalm 130? Okay. Absolutely. Waiting and trusting. Anybody else? Yeah. And I think there's three things, Jacob, as you mentioned that. One, forgiveness, there in verse 4. Mercy in verse 7. And redemption or forgiveness, as you mentioned there in verses 7 and 8. So, as we wait or we hope, the idea of, I think the word hope, the Hebrew word actually means to wait. So he mentions there in verse 5, I wait for the Lord, my soul waits. Verse 6, my soul waits for the Lord. O Israel, hope in the Lord. All of these words carry the same idea. But hoping, does that mean that we think that it might happen? Maybe it won't happen, or not, it might happen? What is he saying there? Is it 50-50 chance? What's the meaning of that? Okay. And it's the idea of waiting rather than thinking that it might happen. You're waiting for it to happen, right? That's the hope. It's the knowledge that it's going to occur. Maybe you just don't know when, right? Okay, very good. Excellent. Anybody else? Turn to 2 Peter chapter 1. We'll close with this idea. Second Peter chapter 1. In verse 5, we looked at this not too long ago when we studied 2 Peter. But also for this very reason, giving all diligence, add to your faith virtue, to virtue knowledge, to knowledge self-control, to self-control perseverance or patience, to perseverance godliness, to godliness brotherly kindness, and to brotherly kindness love. So the teaching from the book of Psalms and 130 teaches us patience or hope and the eager waiting for it to occur. But Peter says the same thing in the New Testament, doesn't he? That we're to add patience to our faith. Okay, thank you. We're out of time. Appreciate your thoughts this evening.